All right. I've got 7 p.m. David, Nate, are we ready to go?
I believe we are, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. I guess I'll start with a special notice. That in accordance with Governor Newsom's executive orders N-25-20 and N-29-20, this meeting will not be accessible to the public to promote social distancing during the coronavirus pandemic. To ensure the safety of the public, Planning Commission and staff in-person participation at meetings of the Planning Commission will not be allowed during the time covered by the above-referenced executive orders. Instead, members of the public can participate by clicking on this link to join this meeting. And is that good, Mr. Litson?
That is fine. Proceed apace.
Thank you, sir. All right. I'm calling to order the Yorba Linda Planning Commission meeting at 7 p.m. on June 9th, 2020. First item on our agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance. Commissioner Singh, could I ask you to lead us in the pledge, please?
Sure. Please rise. Please stand. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America.
America and to the republic
for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Recording Secretary, could we please take roll call?
Yes. Pease?
Present.
Singh?
Present.
Darnell? Absent. Bernstein?
Present.
Masterson absent.
Thank you. Next item on our agenda is public comments. Public comments is an opportunity for any member of the public to speak to the Planning Commission on an item that is not on our agenda. If there's anyone wishing to speak, could you please identify yourself and use the raise hand function? Do we have anyone wishing to speak?
There are no members of the public requesting to speak at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Farnsworth. All right, next up, can I have a motion to waive reading in full of all resolutions on the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Recording Secretary, could you please take roll, please?
Yes, please.
I vote yes.
Singh?
Yes.
Darnell, absent. Bernstein?
I vote yes.
Masterson's absent. Motion carries 3-0.
Thank you. Next item is old business, the 2021 to 2029 housing element workshop number 4. Mr. Brantley.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to request that our planning manager, Nate Farnsworth, provide an overview of the staff report to get us started. Nate is our project manager for the housing element. Nate, you want to go ahead and give us an overview?
Yeah, you bet. Just want to confirm that you can see my screen.
Yes,
sir. Presentation.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, so for tonight, this is our fourth housing element workshop. We're not going to go back to the flag salute. Our agenda for tonight will include an update on our property owner stakeholder meeting. Talk a little bit more about our congregational housing overlay and concept and a commercial housing overlay concept, and then we'll talk a little bit about next steps. So with that, let me dive into things. Just as a reminder to the public, the regional housing needs assessment is the state mandated local housing allocation that has been provided to all of the jurisdictions throughout California. Yorba Linda falls within the Southern California Association of Governments. This cycle, which covers 2021 through 2029, SCAG was assigned by the state 1.34 million new housing units to plan for, or to essentially zone for. And then that 1.34 million units was then allocated out to all of the jurisdictions throughout the SCAG region. There's 197 jurisdictions in six counties that make up the SCAG region. And so Yorba Belinda was allocated 2,415 housing units to zone four, not necessarily required to build those units, although the city will make every attempt to zone four those units. And then those are broken down into four different income categories, very low, low, moderate, and above moderate. And those are shown on the screen here, the different numbers assigned to each of those. We also anticipate that there will be a need to create a buffer above and beyond the 2,415 units in case properties are developed in a manner that is not consistent with the density assigned to those particular parcels in the housing needs, the housing inventory. So with that, I wanted to talk a little bit about our housing sites inventory based on comments from the public and from council and from the Planning Commission to date. These are some of the guiding principles that have been established. The overarching guiding principle really has been to try to maintain as best as we can the character of Yorba Linda while still complying with the state's housing requirement. And in order to do that, some of the guiding principles that have been provided to date have included to utilize ADUs to the greatest extent allowable by HCD, to support, the commission seemed to be supportive of the affordable housing overlay concept for religious sites. There's a support for trying to utilize larger parcels, that those are better than trying to utilize multiple smaller parcels throughout the city where possible. There's been support for densities that exceed 30 units per acre in certain locations. It's been suggested that we try to divide affordable housing sites between the east and the west sides, recognizing that the east side of the city has significant topographic and other environmental constraints that make that challenging, but we've made an effort to try to balance that as best as possible and to evaluate the east side of the city. Also been recommended to consider mixed use opportunities or rezone existing commercial centers. And then we've also been strongly encouraged to pursue the state-owned property in Coal Canyon as a potential housing site. So with that, based on all the public input that's been received, again, we've identified what we're calling a candidate draft housing sites inventory. This map here shows sites that have been identified by the public, by the Planning Commission, by council, by public comments, and by and then through staff analysis, GIS analysis, and windshield surveys, trying to determine where appropriate sites might be located. We've tried to take the approach of leave no stone unturned. And based on all of these properties, last month in May 18th of last month, we sent out a letter to all of the property owners that were on this candidate housing sites list and invited them to a stakeholder meeting where we could educate them on what this means, what the housing element law is all about, what it would mean to be on the housing sites inventory. And we sent out about 250 letters to the community. We got responses back probably from about, I would say 70 to 75 different property owners that attended this stakeholder meeting that we held. There were a number of people who were not able to attend that meeting, and we've been reaching out to them as well and setting up individual meetings to chat with them. But I wanted to talk a little bit about what that meeting entailed. It was primarily, like I said, an opportunity to educate and bring the public and these property owners up to speed on what the state's housing element priorities are and housing law entails. But it mostly consisted of really an opportunity to chat back and forth with these property owners and to answer questions. These were some of the frequently asked questions throughout this process. So People were wanting to know, how were the properties selected and why was my property identified? If my property is rezoned, will I still be able to, and you know, they list the various things they're currently using the property for. Will I be able to still continue to use that until I'm ready to do something else with my property? If my property is rezoned, do I have to redevelop right away? Will the city be purchasing my property or using eminent domain? Will my property be rezoned or will my property tax be reassessed? What do you mean by higher density? So we walked through a lot of these questions, and it may be helpful here if I just address some of these questions for those that may be joining with us that were not part of that meeting, and I think that would be helpful. So I kind of walked through how the properties were selected and why they were identified. If the property is rezoned, will I still be able to utilize it for whatever I'm currently utilizing it for? And the answer is yes. Yorba Linda would still continue to allow for you to use your property. The one catch with all of this is that in order for us to demonstrate to the state that these are eligible sites, there has to be some sort of foreseeable development opportunity to happen over the course of the next 8 years. So if someone's, you know, saying, I don't want to, you know, do anything for the next 50 years, that site probably will not be eligible as a site. But if someone's saying, hey, I want to, you know, I'm thinking over the next 5 years or so, I want to retire and get out of this area and, you know, go move closer to family. And those kinds of sites would be eligible and they could continue to utilize the site for its current use until they're ready to do that. If my site is rezoned, do I have to redevelop? And the answer is no, you don't have to. You can, and that opportunity may be there and people may start knocking on your door and asking if you're interested in selling, but you're not required to redevelop. The city is not required to build the housing. We're required to provide the opportunity for the housing to be built. Will the city be purchasing my property? No, the city will not be purchasing the property, and we're not going to be using eminent domain to acquire property. But the opportunity will be there if it's rezoned for the market essentially to come and knock on your door and see if you're interested. If my property is rezoned, will my property tax be reassessed? And our understanding is that property tax is not reassessed unless there's an exchange of property from a new owner, or in the case that you make physical improvements on the property, then that physical improvement is reassessed. But simply rezoning the property would not trigger a reassessment of the property. And then what do you mean by higher density residential? Well, let me walk through that because I think that's helpful. We provided some pictures to the public to give just some examples of what higher density might mean. So in Yorba Linda, we have a couple examples of projects that might be, say, 10 units to the acre. You may be familiar with these. We've got off of Baston Cherry and Lakeview, the Anderson Grove project. We've got across the street from the Nixon Library, the Brandywine homes that were built. Those are at about 10 units to the acre. And then another example, this is from San Luis Obispo, but this is a 10 unit to the acre property. You can see that depending on, you know, the height and parking required on site, and, you know, that you can get, you know, higher structures that are still, you know, depending on the size of the units, it just really can vary what those units would look like. But that's kind of some examples of 10 unit to the acre density. When you get into 20 units to the acre, if you go out to Savvy Ranch, our Oakcrest Heights and Oakcrest Terrace projects are both built at around 20 units to the acre. And then here's another example from San Luis Obispo. This project is also built at around 20 units to the acre. When we get into higher densities of around 30 units to the acre, Yorba Linda doesn't really have any current examples in that density that we're showing here, but you can see a variety of different types of development that could occur at the 30 unit to the acre range. And as you get up into the higher densities, these are some examples of 40 units to the acre, and then 50 units to the acre. And again, a lot of it is just varying depending on the size of the units, how the parking is established, whether it's you know, some of these projects may be senior housing, so less parking is required. So it just kind of depends on how that's set up. But those are just some examples of what we provided to the public as far as densities and projects that have, especially focusing on projects that have been built in Yorba Linda to give them some context. With that, so that was the you know, the essence of our, let me just go back here for a second. Our stakeholder meeting, very successful, I would say, as far as participation goes. We had, we were able to conduct that meeting in person at the community center. And we also broadcasted that meeting over Zoom. So simultaneous broadcast and in-person setting. And that that worked out pretty well for that meeting. We're hopeful for some of our upcoming housing element workshops that we'll be able to be in person when our council chambers are completed with the renovations in there. And so we're seeing a lot of requests now from property owners that are wanting to meet. And David and I have been meeting individually with property owners to talk through their specific site, constraints on their sites, what the city might rezone their property to include. We've had some really good discussions with people and we're making note of all that. We anticipate coming back to the Planning Commission in July with an updated list of properties with some notes based on those meetings that we've had with the property owners. So let me dive into this. One of the other projects or concepts that we're really excited about is this congregational lands overlay concept, where we would create affordable housing overlay to over the some of the religious sites to allow for development of affordable housing on those sites. We've got 37 religious institutions in Yorba Linda. I believe Yorba Linda has the highest per capita number of church facilities in the county. And if it's not the highest, it's certainly one of the highest. We've got a lot of churches that are here. So a lot of opportunity on these larger parcels that have the capacity to add additional housing on those sites. And the benefit behind this as well is that many of these churches are interested in making other improvements to their site, but they're unable to, you know, it takes a lot of fundraising to get the capital to make some of those improvements. And oftentimes housing developers can come in and provide assistance to create some of those improvements that the churches are looking to make. And they can get the housing onto the site as well. So kind of a win-win-win all the way around, maybe even four wins, depending on how you look at it. But anyway, this is all based off of a state law that was put into place, AB 1851, which allows for a 50% reduction in religious parking in order to accommodate affordable housing. And it also allows for parking to count towards the housing project's parking requirements. So utilizing that law, we're looking at actually bringing on someone, taking a contract to the council at the next council meeting with the Arroyo group to help us prepare the overlay concept for these religious sites. And hopefully we'll have some more information that we can bring back to the commission as we move forward with developing that overlay concept. And then finally, we're also looking at creating a mixed use overlay, a housing overlay concept for certain commercial center sites. Just some of the concepts we're throwing out there for right now are potential residential overlays on smaller strip centers that may have marginal or, you know, lower performing commercial uses that are there. We anticipate allowing for the base use to remain and improvements to be permitted, you know, in the meantime until development occurred, and then considering looking at densities of, you know, between 20 to 40 units per acre at this point. And then also looking at mixed use overlay on certain larger shopping centers, perhaps some of the underperforming shopping centers. We are anticipating that we would probably want to require that they maintain a certain amount of commercial square footage, recognizing that Yorba Linda is really a bedroom community, and we really don't have a whole lot of commercial land that's here. And so want to look at the highest and best use for these commercial sites. And, you know, sometimes getting the highest and best tenants into those commercial sites allows for you to reduce the amount of square footage of commercial space and add in the residential component to that. So we're looking at that as an option. If they were wanting to go with 100% residential project, we're thinking that we probably would require a market study to demonstrate that that's the highest and best use for that particular property. And again, June 15th, we're taking a contract also with the Arroyo Group to help us prepare that overlay concept as well. And so with that, where we're at as far as rezoning goes, we've done our public outreach surveys, identified our candidate housing sites. We are, we've been working through the HCD feasibility analysis to determine eligibility of these different sites. Still working through that. We've reached out to the property owners to make, to find out which property owners are interested and which ones are not interested. We've requested that June 2nd meeting that, that property owners provide us with feedback. If they're not interested, we want to know that. If they are interested, we want to know that. And so our next step at this point really is that we're going to complete our outreach to the property owners, prepare an updated list of eligible candidate housing sites, bring that back to the Planning Commission for consideration. Our request will likely be that you recommend that the City Council take a look at that and provide authorization to shoot the housing element up to the state for, you know, for their preliminary review of the housing element. They'll take 60 days to review the document, and then they'll send it back to the city to make make whatever changes they would propose to make at that point. And then we'll go through the public hearing process. The one unique thing about Yorba Linda that I know the Planning Commission is aware of, but the public may not be, is Measure B, which is essentially back in 2006, the residents of Yorba Linda put an initiative onto the ballot that was successfully passed that requires essentially that any upzone of property requires a vote of the people. So even if the council were to approve all of these rezonings that are being recommended, most of that, if not all of it, will still have to go forward to the electorate for their review and approval. And so we need to be very strategic in the properties that are identified, because we want to make sure that those properties are going to be able to be successfully approved by the electorate. And so that's the part about Measure B I wanted to cover. And I think that, that concludes my presentation here. Those are the next steps we'll be going through. And at this point, I'm happy to entertain questions, but I also would highly, we also want to make sure that we give the public an opportunity to weigh in with any comments that they may have. And so, for the sake of the public, if you are interested in speaking, what you'll want to do is use the raise hand function, and we'll provide an opportunity for you to speak. And then, if you're calling in, doesn't look like anyone's calling in, but if you are calling in over the phone, make sure you use the *9 function to, that'll indicate that you have your hand raised, and *6 will unmute you. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Mr. Pease, and happy to take any questions and let you kind of take things from here.
Thank you, Nate. That was an excellent presentation. Appreciate the background and the next steps. I did have one question, if I may. When are we required to submit the housing element to HCD?
So the housing element due date is October 15th, 2021. There is a 120-day, they don't like to call it grace period. I actually don't know what HCD likes to call it, but there's a 120-day period in which you're not considered late. And so anyway, you essentially have until February of 2022, but really the October 15th is the deadline.
And if I may, is that the date we're shooting for, Nate?
That's the date that we're aiming for. although there's a good chance it may go beyond that. One of the challenges that we've had this time around is that there was a major delay in getting the RENA allocation out to the jurisdictions. SCAG delayed things by, there was a significant delay that was put in on their end, and that resulted in a delay in the RENA getting assigned out to the jurisdictions. So, we're all a little behind schedule, and everyone's been reaching out to HCD requesting a delay in the deadline, or, you know, to push that deadline back.
Mm-hmm.
HCD's response has been that that deadline is established by statute and that they don't have the authority to push that deadline back. They're being flexible and working with cities, but they said that would be a legislative change that would require in order to necessitate pushing that deadline back.
Got it. Thank you. And before we go to public comments, I wanted to make sure that I gave the other planning commissioners an opportunity to ask questions.
I just have a question, please.
Of course. Commissioner Singh.
Thank you. Just curious, I know you mentioned about the overlay on the religious site. How does it work? I mean, if a builder decides to build on the religious site, does the religious site, I mean, do they sell the portion of the land, or how does it work?
That's a great question, and that's part of what will be developed with this overlay concept. So we'll have some more information on how that will work out, but essentially there seems to be a lot of flexibility that's allowed here. I would anticipate that, you know, from my understanding, the church would own the property, and the housing would be, you know, they would allow for the housing to be built on their property.
And what does the church get out of that? I mean, do they get a rent or per property, or besides the improvements, what the builder is helping to build, but lifetime, once the improvements are made, is there any residual income which the church gets?
You know, it all depends how it's set up. I mean, they could be set up as rental units. Some of the churches will utilize these to allow for their own congregants to live in those units. And so there's kind of a benefit for them as well. There could be rental income that comes from these. They could sell the part of the property off, and they could be ownership units. There's really kind of a wide range of what could happen here, but that's part of what the Arroyo Group will be helping us put together with this plan.
Thank you.
Excellent questions, Commissioner Singh. Commissioner Bernstein?
Thank you. I just have one very quick question. I understand the timing of October and February. When would Measure B come into play?
That's a great question. So with Measure B, the earliest that we see that we could get anything on for Measure B would be the primary election of 2022, which would be June of 2022. Aside from doing a special election, you're really looking at primary elections and the general elections. So you're looking at June of 22, November 22, June 24, November 24. So the deadline, and let me clarify, because I think this will help as well. Your local housing plan or your housing element is due to the state by October 2021. That doesn't mean that you have to implement all of your programs and rezonings by that time. So you actually have 3 years from the due date to roll out and implement your housing program. So we really would essentially have until October of 2024. And if you have that grace period in there, you're looking at February of 25 before all of the rezoning efforts have to be put in place.
That's a great point.
Just one last question.
Please.
I understand we're looking at a buffer so that when Measure B comes around, we have enough numbers. in the instance that there are not enough numbers after Measure B, then what happens?
That's another great question, and we posed that question to HCD, and HCD's question was, where their response was essentially, well, if it doesn't work out the first time, we'll probably ask you to try again. And if it doesn't work out the second time, we don't know. I mean, really, that was the response that HCD provided to us. So I think it's important to note that we were successful the last time we did this mm-hmm. with measures H and I in the 2012 initiative process. Took a lot of education and outreach efforts to do that, but we were able to successfully rezone 14 properties for housing element purposes, and all of those sites to date have been, with the exception of one small half-acre site, they've all been developed or are under development.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Bernstein. This is a workshop, and I want to make sure that members of the public have an opportunity to comment and ask questions. In order to streamline the process, make sure everyone has an opportunity to comment. We do have a time limit of 5 minutes for comments, but with that, then I would like to open it up to the public to provide their input. Is there anyone from the public wishing to speak?
So Chair, or Mr. Pease, maybe while people are considering their comments and questions, let me turn to the chat. We have had a few comments come in through there. So let me read through those questions and answer those as best as I can. So question from ML, what are your contingency plans if you do not get enough volunteers from the 250 owners to rezone? We anticipate that we're going to be able to get enough units through that process. But I guess the contingency plan would be we'll have to look into that when we get to that point. But we're optimistic that we'll be able to find enough sites based on the housing candidate sites that have been identified to date. I think that the overlay project, the overlay concepts are two really good opportunities, the use of ADUs. And then also we have had a lot of interest from property owners that were reached out to. So we're fairly confident we'll be able to meet that through the efforts that we're working on. I would also point out that we're trying real hard to work with the state as well, who, you know, I mentioned the Coal Canyon property. We're hoping the state is willing to be a team player here as well. They've assigned us a really large number. They own a significant amount of property within the city, and we're hoping that they will join in and be a team player in this process. So we're working with the state to reach out to them and see what they're willing to do as far as helping out with this process. Next question also came from ML. Has the Planning Commission considered zoning on the higher density around 40 or 50 rather than the 10 and 20 proposed? And would that satisfy the goal with less property needing to be rezoned? This is a great question, and one that we've addressed with the Planning Commission in previous workshops. And the Planning Commission was supportive of considering higher density zonings on fewer parcels rather than having the more traditional zoning that we have in place spread throughout the city on a bunch of different properties. So that's something that that some of these overlay concepts are considering. So that's a great question. And would that satisfy the goal with less properties? Yeah, absolutely. Nancy Salee asked Nancy Salee asked if there was a bid process to select the Arroyo Group, and we went through. We're in total compliance with our procurement policy and purchasing policy as far as the Arroyo Group selection process goes. So that will be on the agenda for the 15th for the City Council. Diana Hudson asks, if you have known about this for so long, why didn't you tell those involved and are not trying to fast track this? So this has been an effort, and I guess I should just, this would be a good opportunity for us to share this, would be, we were have been under the impression up until fairly recently that the city's RENA allocation was going to be about 207 housing units. There was a last minute change to the RENA methodology that was done at the SCAG, up at Southern California Association of Governments, at the regional council, where that number, that the methodology used to disperse that number was changed at the last minute without a whole lot of input and oversight and analysis. And that number was revised and changed the city's number to about 2,400 housing units. Since that time, the city has been working to appeal that number. We felt we had a very strong appeal given all the constraints that this jurisdiction has with wildfire and flood protection and the topography that's out here. And we presented all of those arguments to SCAG thinking that we had pretty good arguments to have our RENA number be reduced. And it fell on deaf ears. And so since that time, we have been working diligently to try and move forward with finding enough sites to meet this this RENA allocation. And the fact of the matter is that we have a deadline fast approaching, and we have state requirements to comply with that. And we have been doing a considerable amount of public outreach through a variety of different workshops and surveys and information on the city's website. And so anyway, hopefully that answers that question to some extent.
Hey, Nate, could you just provide some context, maybe just talk a little bit about the extent of appeals by Orange County cities of the RENA allocation?
Yeah.
And so, just to kind of ground the city's efforts in relation to what other communities are also thinking and doing relative to this issue.
Yeah. So I had mentioned that the city's RENA allocation went from 200 to about 2,400 housing units. The significant increase really happened that Los Angeles and Orange County jurisdictions all had their numbers significantly increased. And Orange County jurisdictions and many Los Angeles jurisdictions filed appeals. There were about 50 appeals that were filed among the 197 jurisdictions within the region. So really, you know, it's like a quarter of the jurisdictions appealed their number. Almost all of those appeals were denied. The only appeals that were granted were very minor adjustments to the numbers. And within Orange County, I believe it was about half the county appealed their number, and there were no Orange County appeals that were successfully approved. It's been a frustrating effort, but
hey, is it safe to say that this particular RENA cycle really is unprecedented in comparison to prior RENA cycles, and just how this was kind of rolled out, the methodology and the last minute kind of move by certain communities within the SCAG region to push a lot of the RENA, regional RENA number into jobs-rich areas such as Orange County and Los Angeles?
Yeah, so this number is higher than it's ever been. Much of that is being attributed to pent-up demand from previous housing cycles where there perhaps was not enough housing built to accommodate the demand that's out there. The rationale at SCAG was to have these units shifted from Riverside and San Bernardino, where there's land available, but to shift them more towards where the jobs and the transit are. This was one of the frustrating aspects for Yorba Linda, in that we don't have a whole lot of jobs. We don't have major job centers in Yorba Linda. We don't have any high quality transit areas within Yorba Linda. We barely have two bus lines that run through the city. And so it was frustrating to have, to sort of have a one size fits all approach applied to Yorba Linda, when we felt like we had enough constraints that were, want to be team players with this process, but the number's just larger than it's ever been. And, most jurisdictions are just in shock with the number that they've ended up with, and, trying to do everything that they can to lower their RENA. And it's a zero sum game. You can't lower the 1.34 million units. So if you reduce it for one jurisdiction, it has to go somewhere else within the region. And that's in part why many of the appeals were not successful, was that, you push the number down here and it pops up somewhere else in another jurisdiction. So hopefully that addresses that question, David.
Yeah, thanks, Nate.
Let me go through some of the rest of these. I don't see any hands, just comments in here. So thank you for this is from R. Hine. Thank you for all the good work. My question relates to Cielo Vista. My understanding is that they are on the fast track to join the city of Yorba Linda. Are they being given the rezone opportunity, and why not? David, you may have a better feel for what's going on with Cielo Vista. Do you want to try and tackle
that? Sure, I can answer that. So Cielo Vista is an 80-unit development project, single family, just north of sort of the Stonehaven Villa del Agua development area. And it's in a portion of what's called our sphere of influence that was technically not within the city's municipal boundary. And long story short, the property owners came to the city about probably 10, 12 years ago, right after Measure B was approved, and inquired about whether or not if they were to annex to the city and process a development application through the city, whether it would be subject to Measure B. And the determination was that yes, in fact, it would be. So they opted to remain in the county while their project plans went through the entitlement process with the County of Orange. And thus they were under the County of Orange's rules. They ultimately obtained approval of their development project. Again, it's about 80 homes up in the hills there above Stonehaven. They received their approval from the County Board of Supervisors, and kind of parallel to that effort, they submitted a request to the LAFCO, which is the state agency that governs municipal boundary determinations. They submitted an application to LAFCO to ultimately annex into the city of Yorba Linda once their entitlements were approved. And shortly after the county approved their entitlements, they in fact did obtain approval from LAFCO to annex into the city. So the city of Yorba Linda really did not have any authority over the sort of review of their development project application to the county. We provided comments throughout the process and tried to ensure that if that project ever were annexed into the city, that it was designed in a way that would meet Yorba Linda standards. And so I would say that, by and large, just the way that the streets are designed and the stormwater provisions and you know, the grading aspects and just the overall design of the project is consistent with your Belinda standards. but it's hillside development. So there wasn't a lot of ability just based on the topographic constraints to do like higher density housing. Normally you want to have lower density housing in hillside areas, which I think Nate, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about kind of the east-west balance of our housing element. It becomes very challenging from a grading standpoint to develop multifamily developments in, you know, extreme topographic areas. So that project is completely single family, you know, like I said, hillside development. And the application that was submitted to the County of Orange, reviewed and approved by the County of Orange, was for a single family development. And there is not any additional land area within the Cielo Vista project that would lend itself to densification pursuant to our housing element. And so, yeah, it just wouldn't be feasible.
Okay, so let me touch on a couple of these other questions. Still no hands here, so just chat questions. From Diana Hudson, why does the state own Yorba Linda City property? There's a lot of different agencies that own property within the city's boundary. Much of what the state owns in Yorba Linda is Chino Hills State Park, which, you know, happens to fall with, portion of it falls within the city's jurisdictional boundary, but the state ultimately has jurisdiction over those properties. It's similar to like school districts owning their own properties. The county owns property within the city, and, you know, water districts and other utility companies own property. This particular property in Coal Canyon is a property that the state acquired, I believe primarily for conservation, wildlife protection purposes. But we're looking into that property to see, you know, it's got freeway on and off ramps that head right to that property. So clearly that property was intended, and we have a planned development called the Coal Canyon Planned Development that considered that property as a commercial site. And so the zoning is in place for that property to allow for development to occur out there despite the state's ownership of the parcel. Cheryl Christensen Bennett asks, when will the overlays be available to the public? We are jumping on that once the contract is amended to allow for us to move forward on that. Hopefully we've got a lot of that put together within, you know, the next, I would say probably by fall or towards the end of the year, that hopefully will all be put in place and made available for public review. I mean, again, we technically have through 3 years to roll out these zoning programs, but because of Measure B, we're trying to get this put together because even those overlays are going to be subject to Measure B in many places. So we will get that out to the public as soon as that's available. And then R. Hine, thank you. Is the county at all accountable for a housing element? Yeah, counties are also responsible for housing elements for just for the unincorporated areas of the county. And so they will be preparing their own. And Mr. Pease, that's all the comments. And then I do see a hand from Elizabeth Hansberg, and I can allow her the opportunity to speak if you like.
Please, yes. Ms. Hansberg, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. My name is Elizabeth Hansberg. I run the housing advocacy organization, People for Housing Orange County. I want to say that you guys are doing a great job of getting your information out to the public And I really commend all the channels of engagement. I know I'm on your email list, and your staff has been doing a great job of keeping everybody informed. So just wanted to provide just a little bit of context. It is definitely true that the change in methodology did shift a lot of the critical mass of housing, new housing development, back toward Orange and LA counties. That's very true. But just to, for the record, the methodology change was in January of 2020. Everyone received revised numbers in March of 2020, and those were appealed over the summer, and then they were finalized in September of 2020. So yes, it was a change, but it isn't like it happened yesterday. So everyone's been working diligently, but we did know that we need to be planning for these things on the event that the appeals weren't successful. But anyway, just wanted to clarify that. I actually would like to ask a question about the congregational lands idea seems to be really catching on in different parts of Orange County. And I am curious, for a city that has a ballot initiative requirement, if you were to have the successful adoption of, you know, whatever, 25 sites where you could do a by right affordable housing development, would those then have to be approved individually by Measure B, even after the whole change would be approved? Like, would it have to get approved by Measure B twice, like once in terms of the rezone and then again for the project itself? So I would really love to know about that. And then the other thing that I wanted to say, and I've been listening to your good thoughts about how to preserve the character of the city of Yorba Linda, preserve the lifestyle that is definitely an outdoorsy and suburban low density lifestyle. But just to keep in mind that the idea of putting all of the affordable housing, you know, or all of the dense housing on a few places, actually works against the goal of affirmatively furthering fair housing. If we're going to create communities that are integrated both racially and socioeconomically, it's not okay to warehouse all of the low-income housing on one site or on two or three sites, right? Best case scenario, best planning practices are to create mixed income communities where people's homes are not necessarily radically different from their neighbors. So if it's a community of high density housing, it could have some market rate high density. It could have some subsidized affordable high density. So just wanted to share that. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Of course, Ms. Hansberg, and we appreciate your latter comment. And you did have a question with respect to Measure B. And Nate, if I could ask you to weigh in on that, please.
Yeah, I may actually turn to Todd on that one, but I did want to thank Ms. Hansberg for her comments there. And I also wanted to clarify that I don't think that it's going to be possible for Yorba Linda to identify just like one or two or three sites to accommodate 2,400 units. I do think that we're going to have this spread throughout a good portion. I think it'll be spread out throughout the community. I think just to clarify, the commission's intent was that, you know, when looking at higher density sites, the commission seemed to be more interested in having fewer sites identified with the higher density let me clarify it this way. The commission seemed to be more interested in looking at utilizing fewer sites at the zoning, the density of like 40 and 50 units to the acre, which is higher than our current traditional zoning allows for, rather than using the 30 units to the acre spread throughout. So the 40 and 50 units is something that we don't have here and would provide opportunities that go above and beyond what's currently here in the community. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify some of that. But Todd, do you want to tackle the Measure B question?
Sure. Well, in short, Measure B would only apply once. So Measure B is applicable to establishing zoning requirements that meet certain parameters, as outlined, one of which is the increase of in density. Once you have that legislative framework in place, which is what triggers Measure B, there would not be a subsequent Measure B vote at the adjudicatory stage. So it's a one vote per area process for Measure B purposes, unless it were to be rezoned again. But I mean, the plan would be to put the zoning in place, so it would just be approved once.
Thank you, Mr. Lipson. We did have one other comment. I'm not sure how to address this one. From Ms. Hudson.
You want me to take that one?
Please.
The question from Ms. Hudson is, seriously, did you plant this chick? And the response is, no, we invited everyone that's on our stakeholder list to attend the meeting and allowed for them to say what it is that they wanted to say.
Thank you, Nate, for handling that. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to comment with respect to the workshop? Nate, is there anyone out there raising their hand?
No, Chair, Mr. Pease, there are no other members of the public requesting to speak at this time, and I don't see any other comments in the chat.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Nate again for that excellent presentation. I want to thank the members of the public for joining us and for submitting your comments, not only in the chat, but during the meeting as well. Since there are no other comments, I am going to close this item. Unless, Nate, you want to give a summary, or are you good with where we are?
No, I guess I'll just conclude with we plan to be back in front of the Planning Commission in July. We will report back to you on the various meetings that we've had with property owners. We'll be adjusting the ranking system that we've been putting together to identify, you know, we've identified all these candidate sites and started to identify them as high priority, medium priority, and lower priority sites. And that's based on a variety of different factors, be it HCD eligibility, property owner interest, site constraints. And we'll provide that updated list to the Planning Commission in advance of the next Planning Commission workshop in July. And then hopefully provide that opportunity to get that up to the public, or to get that up to HCD.
Excellent. And I may have been too premature. Nancy Sally did have one other comment, and I'll read it, Nate.
Sure.
I just want to make certain we take into consideration the fire danger areas of the city. And I think that's a good point that with the recent fires, you mentioned the October, we just had an item on our previous agenda about a rebuild from the October 2020 fire. So, but Nate, let me turn that over to you.
Yeah, that's something that we will definitely take into consideration as we look at these sites. And then since I've got the floor, let me just there's a question from Curtis Wesseln that asked how many people are watching this. And for the record, I show 15 attendees, although it looks like we've got a couple duplicates that are on there, but I'm showing 15 attendees in this meeting. This meeting is also being recorded and will be made available on the city's website tomorrow morning.
That's great. Thank you, Nate. Well, since there are no, are there any other comments?
That looks like that's it.
Okay, great. Then I will, let me just ask Commissioner Singh or Commissioner Bernstein, any final thoughts, anything you'd like to add before we move on?
Thank you, no.
No, thank you.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Of course. With that, then I am going to close this item. Thank staff for their hard work and putting it together and their excellent report. Because it's on the agenda, I know we've already had it, but Mr. Brantley, any final words?
No, sir. I think we're good on the director's report.
Okay. Commissioner Bernstein, Commissioner Singh, anything you'd like to add?
No, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. No correspondence received, Nate?
No.
No.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir. And with that, then, I am going to adjourn this meeting of the Planning Commission to our regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting of June 23rd, 2021, beginning at 6:30 p.m. I want to thank everyone again for your participation, and again to staff for their excellent work and presentation. And with that, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.